Good evening, and welcome to another episode of Under the Helmet. I'm your host, Terrence Biggs. Tonight, we are going to start a series while the APDFL is on hiatus. We're going to highlight pivotal, important, all-time classic games within the league. All these games are available on YouTube on the APDFL website, or on the ATL channel, I should say. But I want to get into this game because when I first started covering APDFL a couple years ago, it was interesting because I had to do a lot of research, and one of the things I found was during the course of the league's history, there's always been eras, like an era of this team was good, this team was good, this team was good, and there's always been a team that to end somebody else's run. Back in 2018, you had the Mississippi Dynasty was trying to go back-to-back as far as league championships, and they lost once, and that was the last loss, and by my math, they haven't lost in 700 days. That's almost 2 years, like two calendar years, two entire calendar years, and there's a good chance they might not lose for 2 years. And
yeah, that's crazy.
You go back into their history where I was telling somebody that I have a 3.5-year-old son. He has more birthdays than they do losses in probably during the course of his life. And it's just one of those things that, I mean, they are on an unprecedented run. And back in 2018, there was a team that, for lack of a term, came out of nowhere. Like, they started 0-5, and here's a couple of stats about the Prattville Patriots that I found interesting. They started 0-5. During that five-game skid to start the season, they scored a total of 47 points. That's 9 points a game. Now, they brought on Kyle Caldwell. Then they scored, over the next five regular season games, 176 points. 30 points a game. Their quarterbacks who aren't Kyle, they threw three touchdowns and eight interceptions. Now, if you look at the Dynasty that same season, their defense was just, they allowed 70 points the whole season, in the regular season. And when I look at it, the two gentlemen that we have tonight, and I see that Matt Kelly's joining. What's going on, Matt?
What's going on, Terry?
What's up? You got me, Yancey, and Gladney. What's going on, man?
What's up, fellas?
What's up, Matt?
And it's weird because that season was, as we mentioned, the Patriots came out of nowhere. Like, they were 0-5, another loss, and that probably would have been the season. But then their defense tightened up. Like, one of our guests tonight, Yancey Powell, Yancey's one of those guys that phenomenally bright, interesting. This whole breaking down a single game was his idea. He gets all the credit for it. This was his idea. Yancey was the guy that season, that regular season, he had four interceptions in the regular season. Four. He had four alone in the playoffs. Like, he had one of those runs in the postseason that it just, like, the ball found him, and he made the plays, and he made plays on a regular basis. Another guess is the cornerstone of the Dynasty offensive lineman, Roderick Gladney. Gladney, what's going on, man?
What's happening? How y'all doing today?
Now, first question is to Yancey. When you guys were having that 0-5 start and you couldn't score, what was that mentality? What was the mindset in that locker room? Was it, did y'all lose hope, or was it more of this, like, let's just kind of hold on and see where it goes?
Kind of like just hope to see where it goes, just stay focused. You know, we knew that we had a young quarterback. He was fresh out of high school. So we already knew that our offense was going to struggle a little bit, but we were just leaning on the defense to just score. All we had to do was just score on defense. And we'll win the game because we wasn't giving up points until we played the Dynasty. The Dynasty is the only team that put up points on us. The other teams, they was putting up 6 or 12 points, and one of those touchdowns was like scoop and score or interception, pick six to the house. So we wasn't really worried because we knew what we had coming. We just didn't want to get left out the playoff race. And we knew that some other teams would lose, that we'd have a chance. Because even after we played Dynasty, after the game, they already knew. They were like, we're going to see y'all in shit once y'all get Kyle. So it was already known that once we got Kyle, that the offense was going to come on strong and the defense was just going to get stronger.
Now, Gladney, y'all had lost one game that year. And it was
just the year we lost to the Kings.
Yes.
Yeah, we can discuss that if you like, but you don't want to hear Gladney's point of view on it.
Ah, man, listen, this is like the
that's the light game, man. That's the light game.
Yeah, that's where they had the New Orleans Stadium game where Kaepernick lost their Super Bowl. They said Beyonce called the light out. Yeah, the same thing happened.
Oh yeah. Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, on the road, yeah. That's, you know what I'm saying? Like I say, man, they won the game, but it's just funny how they score, and when they scored, it was third quarter, and then all of a sudden, it's the end of the fourth. I'm like, wait a minute. I know my arithmetic ain't the best, but I can count.
Now, we also joined by Dynasty wide receiver Corey Tucker. Tuck, what's going on? First, have you had any sleep since the birth of the little one?
Yes, I have had some sleep. That's true.
You are a lucky one to have some sleep. Now, Matt, to you, before we get to Tuck, as someone from Alabama, you saw the Patriots up close, and you know a lot of their players. When they made the switch to Kyle, did you know automatically that something was going to change, or did you think that they were too far gone to make a serious run?
Nope. I already knew what they had over there. And once Kyle came, I expected at least be in the conference championship at the minimum. Because, like Yancey said, they wasn't getting scored on, and I think – They lost two or three games by 6 points or 2 points or less, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, the kid they had, he was fresh out of high school. I think he had graduated right in the middle of y'all season, right? Yes. Or right at the end of the season, something like that. So that was the biggest part. He was still getting acclimated to the speed of the game, but once Kyle came over there with the pieces they already had on offense and defense, it should have been no less than a conference championship. And they rightfully so were going to be in the national championship. And they went back every team that they lost to, just about they beat in the playoffs. So,
yep.
Blowout. With the difference. Yeah.
And they put up points. Now, Tuck, when you look at that dynasty season, Gladney had started the talk about the light game, and we'll get back to him give your full opinion. I got time. What am I going to do? When you come off that loss and you look toward the rest of the season, and it looks like the dynasty were making people pay for that loss, like down the road, how did that loss change the course of that season for you?
I don't think it deterred the end goal for me. I think it kind of reignited a fire because everybody felt jaded. That's one of the games that I didn't travel to, a couple of us didn't travel to, and then the lights happened. And the goal was to go undefeated. That was the goal to set out. Mike pretty much made that known. Let's go undefeated, win it all. So once we lost, we was like, okay, literally, let's make everybody pay. Let them know that that shouldn't have happened, so we'll take it out on everybody all the way to the championship.
Now, Yancey, you guys are on this run. You're blowing teams out left and right. You actually hung up a huge number on the Kings, like in that postseason run. You get to the postseason, like I said earlier, as I mentioned, you had a postseason like I've seen a few defensive backs have. You had four picks in a couple of games. What changed for you? Did the ball seem like it just found you, or did you just kind of relax a little bit, or did you know that you had an offense that would score points?
That's what it was. It wasn't like once our old quarterback was in there, it was like I was pressing too much. Like, I got to make this play. I got to make this play. And I dropped a couple picks during that 0-5 start. But once we got Kyle, I kind of relaxed. Like, okay, I know they're going to put up points, so I ain't got to worry about it. And then that's when my dogs, J-Rob and Pat Campbell, went to Eaton. And Tyrone up the middle, the ball just found me. Finally caught it.
There you go. Now, Gladney, you are known as one of the better offensive linemen in the league. When you look back at that season, how much have you changed since then? Or is it more of like, you know, I'm just going to show up and do my job and go home? Or do you think you've changed in the last 2 years as far as your talent, as far as your production, as far as your approach to the mental aspect of football?
Nah, man. Terry, I'm going to be honest with you, man. I gave up a long time ago about giving a care about this, like, football stuff, man. I do this for fun. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, just to be honest with you, man, like, I played a little arena ball and everything, and college ball way harder and stuff like this. But, I mean, I just do this for fun, man. Like, I don't knock the competition, but when it's competition, I step up for competition. When it's like, you was asking me about the Alabama Tigers on one podcast, and I'm like, who are those guys? Like, those are games I just show up for, Terry. I get out of bed and show up. I might be late. They'd be happy if I'm on time for those games, man. Like, we don't need that. You know what I'm saying? Let some young guys get some reps, man.
We had them on last week, and it was funny because it was Judge Lewis, and we're sitting there, and at first it was supposed to be the owner, because she jumped in my mailbox, in my inbox, and saying how our show didn't clearly represent their side, so we gave their coach the chance to explain. And the first thing he said when he knew that Lewis was on the line was, well, you know, we have 11 offensive linemen on my mama's soul. Lewis laughed. I have never heard him laugh a day in my life. It was a kind of laugh where he laughed and everything went silent, like, that's awkward as hell. Mm-hmm. And then the coach gave the phone to a player. Like, he just dipped after, like, 20 minutes. Just, he apparently had enough. So, I guess you're right when it comes to that. Matt, when you look at this matchup going in, the game before, the Dynasty had, they were down 13-0 to the Mobile Generals, and they didn't get nervous. Like, it wasn't like panicking time. As a player in this league, when you see a team get down but don't panic, as an opponent, what does that go through your mind? Like, oh, these guys are not nervous, even though they are down by 2 scores.
They got ice in their veins. You have to be. That means you can't make a mistake. They're not getting nervous. They're not pressing. They're sticking to their game plan. It puts a little pressure on you on that if you got that lead, because you'll start pressing because you don't want to make a mistake that lets them back in the game, and then they just chip away at you. You know, they get you 3 and out, then they score, and then they force another 3 and out, or they don't let you get a long drive. You have a 6-play drive with a turnover, you look up. Now that score went from 13-0 to 13-13 or 14-13, and you're trying to figure out how that happened so quick. So when you see teams like that can hold their composure, it's kind of tough on the lead because you have to remember to hold your composure too. And they always find that one person. Any good team always find that one person who can't hold their composure and exploit them. And that's kind of what happened with them in the Mobile game.
you find one
that can't that can't keep it together. They got to talk back. And you look up, and now you try to figure out how you lost the game.
There was a late
hit. We gonna talk, man.
There was a late hit.
I know from firsthand.
There was a late hit on one of the Dynasty, and guy gets up and looks at the general and like nods his head. And from that point on, the general didn't score again. They just kind of just stopped scoring. Tuck, when you look at that game as the step to get to the championship again, in the second half of the game, y'all made an adjustment against Mobile. Like, why does it seem like the Dynasty have that propensity to be so adept at making these late game or the second half adjustments where a lot of teams don't?
I think that comes from the experience of everybody on the team. Steve coaches the Lady Panthers, so it's like a lot of coaches on the field. It's a lot of leadership, and we all listen to each other. So, like, Gladney will be giving you, you know, their interior. I can break down the secondary on the field. Steve telling us what he sees. We got somebody in the box telling us what we see, what they see. So we collaborate all the time. And then we go into halftime, put it together. Mike give us our speech. Come on, let's play dynasty football. Stop playing everybody else's game. Play dynasty football.
And he opened up that bat.
We come out. If everybody start having fun, really, everybody just settle down after halftime. Like, this is what they doing. We done seen it. We all got the experience, and let's go execute. So it's really just the overall team experience.
Now, Yancey, you guys had held on to beat the Alabama Blackhawks to get to the championship game. That morning, what was the vibe going to the stadium as far as when you saw your teammates? And was it a different vibe? Were people nervous? Or were you like, it's a business trip?
Well, going to the Blackhawk game?
Oh, no, going to the championship game against the Dynasty.
We were looking for revenge. And try to be the first team to knock off Dynasty. That's what our boo was. We was all hyped in the locker room, especially when we walked up there and we seen all their players come in. That's what really got it going. We were like, oh, yeah, we ready now. We here. We trying to knock these boys off. We know they're a great team. We want to be the guys to knock them off. And they'll put us on top.
Now, Gladney, as a vet, when people have said, off the record, of course, but I'm not going to put names on it, but they've said when they either go to Pearl or they line up against you because of the sheer depth and talent of the Dynasty, where they feel as though they start the game like 14 points behind. Do you think the aura of the Dynasty is a real thing? Like, people legitimately have that tension in themselves, or is it more of you get in their heads by the amount of winning that y'all have done?
Man, I'm going to be honest with you, man. A lot of guys, you never know what, you know what I'm saying, what's going to happen. I'm going to be honest with you. Like, you never know what's going to happen at the game, man. Everybody sounds good and they say things like that, you know what I'm saying? Like, oh, we ain't scared of the Dynasty. But they have to respect us. And that's the difference. Yeah, it's difficult coming to Pearl, you know what I'm saying? There's not a lot of fans. It's like, you know, we got a normal amount of fans. But when you get there, man, it's different, bro. Like, we play four quarters of football. Like, I don't care how many points we score, how many turnovers we have, we play four quarters of football. Baby. Anybody know, boy, it don't stop to hit 0-0, but as long as the light's working, you can see it hit 0-0, you know what I'm saying? But, you know what I'm saying? The Dynasty don't stop until it hits 0-0 on the big clock, not on the running clock that, you know what I'm saying, miraculously goes faster than normal clocks, you know what I'm saying? But, I mean, there's certain guys like J Rob and Pat them, man. There's certain guys that they know what they gotta do, man. They know they gotta come in that game, and you know what I'm saying? It's just a respect thing, man. Like, we not no pushovers, but we like pushing people over though.
I've noticed. I have definitely noticed. Now, Matt, when you watch the first part of the game, Prattville jumped out early by a kick return, and what I noticed that the Dynasty did was they established the run. Like, Jay Hicks' first carry went for 12 yards. What does that say about the confidence of a team when you're down by six, but you're going to start your offense? So where are you going to start your offense? You're not going to do anything different.
From playing against them guys, that's their brand of football. Again, they didn't panic. You know, it was like, okay, great. That's what you did. We still going to show you that we're going to win this in the trenches, and we're going to impose our will. And, you know, it didn't come right off where they just took it over and they did 100 yards right there in the first quarter. like they did on one particular team. I ain't gonna say no name in the championship. but they sat down and they you know, they sat down and they took it out. They was like, okay, you got your shot play in. Now we're gonna play football and go there, and they just chipped away. And when you got a big bruiser like Jay Hicks, eventually it's gonna get tiring hitting somebody that ain't shying away from contact by the second or third quarter or the fourth quarter. They still looking for the contact. And that's just coaching. That's doing what you do best, man. And sticking to the plan, and that's what they did.
One of the things I saw early was, like, young Tuck out here with the Chris route running. When you look at that game early, Tuck, you and Yancey crossed paths a few times. When you saw the fact that behind that pass rush they had very sound defensive backs, how did you adjust your approach?
I didn't, truthfully. Which is no knock to the competition or anybody. I pretty much approach every game the same way. Do me. Like, it's just as simple. Like, the only way I'm going to get beat if I beat myself, if I let somebody get in my head, or if I get off my landmark. So, I mean, I knew that they was back there, but it's like, the sweat kind of like put that in me. It's kind of like just, like me, I was going up against like all Americans at practice as a freshman, redshirt. So I was on the scout team going against our starting defense who led the nation. So I'm kind of like, I don't know, I'm just cool in the situation. I respect that he's back there, but I didn't adjust any, truthfully.
Yancey, when you have like Anthony Williams, our guy Tuck here, as far as the dynasty passing game, and they took their shots early deep. They weren't shy about letting that ball go. When you saw the fact that they wanted to test y'all vertically, what went through your mind at that point?
Well, I knew that's what they was gonna do because. I mean, that's dynasty ball. They're going to try your DB to see if you really can hold your own. So I knew they were going to take their shots. It's just we had to be in the position to make plays on the ball. But they got us in the first couple of passing plays. But then we kind of stepped it up all the way until Mr. Corey and won the game for him. I think it was the fourth quarter when he caught the game-winning touchdown. Other than that, they really didn't do too much with the pass. We were just really worried about Mr. Hicks and Jackson.
No.
That was like our whole game plan coming in to try to really just stop them two. And everything else will fall for itself.
Now, Gladney, you guys made an adjustment where they kicked you out to left tackle to sort of stem the rush that, you know, that the Patriots were featuring the outside. I know that, I mean, going from an interior spot to an outside spot, there's an adjustment, but you seem to make the adjustment quicker. Were you not so much stunned at the speed that you were facing, but when did you flip that switch and you're like, you know what, okay, now that I'm facing a different type of rusher, I need to adjust. When did that happen for you? Like early on, or just kind of like, you know what, I'm just gonna do my job.
Well, I mean, like Corey said, man, I'm kind of adapted to it, like, but like, swag ball different, man. You know what I'm saying? I don't knock nobody else's ball, man. You know what I'm saying? A lot of guys come to the swag, they supposed to be somewhere else, man. Like when I came to the swag, I was a guard. I played tackle all in high school. They moved me to guard in college. My junior year, I played tackle, and my senior year, I was an All-American guard. So, I mean, I can do it all, bro. Plus, like I said, I played arena ball, so I played against different speed and different styles of CNNs and stuff like that, like, every week. Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm just naturally comfortable at guard because I'm a power guy. I like running the ball inside. I want to hit the biggest dude on the field. I don't like those little skinny cheese guys. I mean, Justin, I think, was the number one player in the league that year. Yeah, so yeah. You know what I'm saying? He was the number one player in the league that year, the one president went to the championship. So, I mean, coming into the game, I think I was ranked number 15. Steve them had already hyped me up to be like, you know, you're gonna have to check this dude and, you know what I'm saying, slow him down. So, I mean, we had already game plan forward and stuff like that. Give him a little chance, you know what I'm saying, get a guy a little chance to start out, and if it all goes south, then, you know what I'm saying, put a big body in front of him, make him run. So, I mean, I naturally just adjusted. When I stepped out there, I knew what it was. I knew what it was going to be like. I just want to put pause on you then. So, I mean, it's a game to me. You know what I'm saying? I love competition. I want to go get the best player on defense every game. I don't care what he's doing. I don't care who he is, what school he went to. If you say you're the best, I want you. You know what I'm saying? That's a shot at everybody in the league, and I don't care who say it, bro. You can add me at it. Record it, replay it, bro. If you're the best defensive player, D lineman, DN, you let me know you're the best. Because, you know what I'm saying, I want you on my highlight tape because I'm going to make some highlights off of you. And I don't care what you think about it. I'm a man, and I'm promise you, we gonna brawl.
Oh, damn. Okay. That is true. Everything you have said is right there, truth. Matt, when you look at that matchup and you see one of the best pass rushers to come through the league against our premier interior lineman who kicked out outside, I watched this game about 8 times this weekend because, one, like I said, I have nothing else to do. I noticed that the more the game went on, those battles became a lot more intense. And they started off intense, but they just became, just like Gladius said, pretty much an old school, we need to take this outside and have a fist fight. It was clean, but when you see players of that level in this league who execute at that type of standard, what should that say to a lot of the teams that are trying to get to that point?
Work on your craft. Learn from other people. Ask them, you know, how they get that level. Be coachable at the same time. And study film. And always remember, you can always learn something. Because I know a lot of players in this league, sometimes you can't tell them nothing.
Many.
You sit down there, and you be like, hey, man. And you know, this be a person on the other team. This ain't got someone to be your teammate. But you can't tell them nothing. Because they know it all. And personally, if I'm sitting down there, I've been watching you. I seen you on film. I see you on the field, and I done figured out you one of them type of players. I'm gonna talk to you the whole time. Okay, every time I beat you, I'm gonna remind you I beat you. And then I know a lot of time I make a lot of players mad because I laugh after we do it. You know, they'll make one good play on me, and I laugh, and they're like, "Man, how you laugh?" And I did this. Yeah, one out of 37 times, big deal. But you know, you sit down there and that's how you get those teams that need to get that level, those players that need to get that level. They need to learn from some of the guys that made it and played arena ball, had, you know, been to CFL, NFL tryouts or whatnot, college ball. Because they'll tell you, you can always learn. Every year, I tell kids every year, there's an 18-year-old coming in at a college that's bigger, faster, and stronger than somebody who got there last year. So you got to always, your football IQ can take you a long way.
Now, Tuck, when you look at the game going towards the half and, you know, a dynasty were down, and what was that halftime speech like? Without giving details, but what was the vibe in the locker room when there's a halftime speech? What was the mood of that locker room?
I think OG kind of stepped out and spoke to us, and we just like, we done took their best punch. They got 6 points on the opening kick. So if you look at it, like, our defense is going to give us time, give us the offense time to get rolling, just keep playing dynasty ball. That's pretty much, in a nutshell, what OG said. Of course, Mike pretty much told us, settle down, play your game. It's pretty much simple. The morale wasn't down. Everybody, we've been here before. That's kind of like the move, honestly. Because, again, like the Generals game when we were down, it's kind of how everybody, like, looked at it. Like, okay, we've been here before. We the best team. Let's prove it. I mean, down or up. Like Latin said, we play 4 quarters. That what drew me to Dynasty. They try to break the scoreboard. 2 seconds left, they taking a deep ball. So that's kind of how it was. We've been here, settle down, play your game.
Now, Yancey, when you guys headed to locker room, you were up. What was the mood like in the Patriots locker room? Was it more of like, we got to finish these guys, we got to put the foot on the neck and end them, or more of like super happy and talking about the championship itself?
A little bit of both. We was like, yeah, we got them, but, you know, they dynasty, they known for coming back. But at the same time, we was like, man, we got this game. We got them. We stopped them. They really can't do nothing on us. So we kind of got lax a little bit too much. And it really wasn't no, like, yeah, man, we got to do this. We got to do this. We got to do this. It wasn't none of that. It was kind of like, you know, we was up. We was feeling ourselves for real. I ain't going to lie.
Now, I'm going to start with Gladney, and all of us are going to answer this question, but Gladney, for you first. There's been the legend of the official timeout for about 30 to 45 minutes. Players from the Patriots, some of their coaches, fans, whoever, have said that this is the reason why the Dynasty won that game.
What was the reason? The timeout?
Yeah. Now,
Hold on. Go ahead. I got some before that even happened. But go ahead.
All right. Now, Gladney, my opinion is this. It could be a 30-minute timeout. It could be a 3-minute timeout. You still got to line up and play. There was still a bunch of game left. And I think that, to me, it feels like an excuse. There was a game left, and there was a lot to do. There were plays that were left on that field. Now, as an impartial observer to someone who was actually on the field in that time, when you hear an opposing player or whoever else say that that is the reason why the Dynasty won is because of that extended break, what goes through your mind, and what do you feel about the break itself?
We both had the same break. They were still winning. We both had the same break. It's like, that's not, we called for a review. We didn't call for the timeout. We wanted a review. We didn't say there was going to be a review game. At least said the game could be under review. Like, oh, we can review plays. Oh, for real? Like in college? Like, okay, so that's not our fault that we didn't have the referees that knew how to review things. And it took them an extra few minutes to finish the review. That's not our fault. But we had the same amount of break. I think we was on the same field. We all was standing around at the same time, looking at the same scoreboard. I don't know about that, man. You know what I'm saying? I don't think it was an extended timeout. It was a review of a play that they actually had a bad call, and we won the review. So I appreciate that review. If that was the change of the game, then, hey, good luck, Dynasty. We, and another ring is added.
Now, Matt, same question to you, but kind of spin it a different way. As an independent observer who watched the delay, like people have decided to call it Delaygate, but what are your thoughts about the controversy around it, and do you think that is a legitimate beef?
Like, I get it.
But then I kind of side with Gaddy. Everybody was on the same side. And to their defense, Fat Real was winning at that point. I think they were still up by six, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was,
yeah, we were losing. We were losing. That's all we wanted to review.
What I think happened, just some people got lax, and I think it's I think coaching got lax, and you know, again, you playing a team that don't panic, and that's showed time and time over the last 4 years. If you make a mistake or if you up and you give them some breathing room, they gonna make you pay for it.
Exactly.
And I think that's what really happened. You know, you up, but then yeah, you got that long break. Hey, everybody catching their second win. It ain't no excuses now. That, you know, they're like going outside playing pickup game. Then we take an hour off, and then we like, okay, let's do it again. But I think that's a coaching thing right there. That's who you really have to put that on, because I feel like in some aspects, especially in play calling, they got away from what they did best and what was helping them maintain the lead. Because I think it was even at one point they went out there and threw the ball four straight times and four incomplete passes, and trying to they were pressing. And once you did that, I mean, that played right into the Dyson hand. Hey, we the one that got to play catch up, and then you're going to go out here and give us more time, not only with that break, but then you're going to throw the ball four straight times without a completion. Appreciate it. Quick turnover. And I think Jay Hicks busted a long run right after that.
Nah, he busted that before. And, that's what I was going to get to.
Now,
yeah.
Tuck, to you, when now, people have said that, I mean, first, give me your opinion on the controversy surrounding the delay. Is it justified? Is it excuses? What goes through your mind when you read or hear folks discuss this in those terms?
Like Gladney said, once they said it was a reviewable play, they reviewed it. We have no control over delay. We getting iced out just like y'all are. We got this thing, however long it was it 5 minutes, 30 minutes, we all delayed. So to pick back up, like Matt said, it's coaching. We kept our eyes on the prize, coaches, the leaders on the team kept telling us, stay focused, stay ready, stay focused, stay ready. And so once it was all resolved, we just came out. So I look at it as an excuse. Like, no matter what delay it is, no matter what happened, you're still in control of the outcome. One of my coaches always told me, not one play should not make or break a game. So if you put a team away, you get out on them early, I mean, a blown call or a bad call shouldn't dictate the outcome. What did you do in between the start of the whistle and the last whistle? So I look at it as an excuse.
No. Yeah, but y'all did have one play that started a momentum. I don't know if y'all noticed, but I don't know what did y'all do, but right before halftime, y'all got a penalty, a personal foul penalty. So when we came out, we kicked y'all the ball. I think we kicked off on the 40. And AJ took it back 50 yards. We should have kicked it through the end zone, but for some reason, we kicked it to AJ. And he took it 50 yards, and in the next play, that's when Hicks broke that long run. That's when it started.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And just the delay, it added to it. I'm not going to say that was the reason, but it did kind of add. I'm going to just say that. It added to it, but it wasn't the reason.
I'm going to give y'all another thing that I noticed. And I know the day y'all played this game, me and Terry were talking back and forth doing it. There was a very selfish player out there that should not have been on the field. And when the 13 saw that play on the field, they smelled blood, and they feasted on it.
Mm-hmm.
What name you talking about? Call him name.
Henley Hughes.
Henley Hughes.
He should not have been on that field.
he should not been on that field, and he still went out there trying to prove something. And when Dynasty saw it, I think they ran probably 6-7 straight plays at him.
Mm-hmm. And, you leave somebody sorry, and we going to him.
Yep. And when me and Terry were talking about it, and we was just like, just going to do it. As it was happening, there it is. Boom, boom, boom. And all you saw was him waving to the sideline. That's about the 7th play. Y'all come on and get me. It's over with.
He's never been on the field.
I'm sitting there. I had just changed my son's diaper at the time because he was still a baby. And it was like, and I'm looking at my phone, and Matt's like, oh, watch this. And I'm like, oh, no. Mm-hmm. This is happening right in front of us. I'm like, huh. Now, speaking of that topic, Yancey, to you, let me think about how to ask this question. First, to Matt's point, do you think that player should have been out there?
He should not have been out there. We were saying that before the game. We were like, why is he even putting his stuff on?
Dressing out.
I hope he don't think he's going to get in. But me knowing who he is and who he was cool with that was on the team, we was like, he's going to play a little bit, but we didn't know how much. But, yeah, he shouldn't have been out there.
Do you think that him being on the field was a detriment and end up costing y'all late?
I'm not going to put it all on him. I just put a little bit on. He just shouldn't have been out there. But we was missing one linebacker. He played like the whole first half, number 39, Felix Allen.
Yeah.
He was playing with a broken hand, and it just got too bad to where he couldn't take it no more. So when he came out, we kind of had
to put him in. Is that the one with the cowboy collar?
Nah, he had a cowboy collar. That was number 38. That was 38, yeah. That was who that was. He played, and he really didn't play almost the whole year. That was like his second game back from the 0-5 start because he had something going on. But he came back. So we really were staying at linebacker, so we kind of had to put him in. But we should have probably just went more DBs, which would have probably been the same result. But still, we shouldn't have had him out there. We should have thought of something else to do.
Now, Yancey, I'm going to ask you just a straight out question. Everyone on the show can hear my voice. No, everyone here is honest. Like, just puts their name on things and it's honest. Do you think that even before the game started, that that there's a chance that you guys were going to be outcoached?
Yeah. Well, on what side of the ball? What side of the ball? Because we didn't really have offensive coaches, like an OC. Cal is his own OC, so we really didn't have nobody over him. I'm going to put that out there. Our OC through the whole year ended up going to the defensive side. He became the DC at the start of the playoffs. So pretty much the offense was on him. Like, Cal was calling those plays. He is the OC. Now, Nick Fletcher at the time was the head coach. He's going to let anything ride. He was probably just controlling, like, timeouts and stuff. So if you look at it that way, yes, we were that coach on the offensive side of the ball. But the defense was probably even. Because I'm not sure who's their defensive coach, but they got a great defense, and we had a great defense.
Do you think that Nick should have stepped up and said, look, you know, we need to fix this and get this right? Or do you think at that point that ship had sailed and you're like, you know what? We're just going to do what we need to do.
Man, that whole season was just crazy. Our OC that came to the DC, he should have stayed on the offensive side and he should have took control from the get-go. But it was just a lot of in-house stuff that was going on through the whole year. That just kind of, we were trying to block out. When Cal was there, the 5-0 that he had, we let it ride. So we were just going to ride it on out. It was working during the 5-0 start. that Cal came, and then the first three games of the playoffs, we were like, we'll just keep it going in the championship. Just see how it goes.
Now, Gladney, when you saw, like, as a vet, and you see a team that you're kind of fighting tooth and nail from, but you're starting to gain the momentum, is there a point where you know you're about to break somebody's spirit?
Oh, man, I was just saying, I ain't going to interrupt them boys, man, but I was going to be like, dang, man. We was licking our chops over there. We was there. We was licking our chops. I think Justin had got tired. He had to broke two plays on his side of the ball. You know, what they didn't notice was we started attacking him a little more, started isolating him a little more on their good defense they had. They had a great defense, but you know what I'm saying? Like Corey always say, but first of all, almost every veteran leader on the Dynasty squad is a football coach. Like, I coach online. Like, I've been a run game coordinator for a couple of teams. I coached arena ball. Like, Corey coached receivers. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, we're all coaches, so we make good adjustments, bro. So, we came out with the plan of, oh, yeah, they want to let Justin stay in that wide nine. And he stay out there and keep rushing up the field. We're going to take him out to play and let him kill himself. So, I mean, we start licking our chops when, you know what I'm saying, people start losing their assignments and start giving up plays and, you know what I'm saying, they start kind of directing traffic. That's what I call it, directing traffic. They're like, I'm going to take myself out of the play. You got to make this play. You know what I'm saying? Like, you ain't never had a defensive player say that. You know what I'm saying? It's plenty on the field. He know the play coming, but you know what I'm saying? It's hard to stop it. But, yeah, them guys, I think they kicked the guy off the sideline and everything. He got the fighting. You got a D-line to get the fighting with a coach or something. I don't know. We started licking our chops and y'all started arguing over there. We lick our chops and stuff like that, man. We see the wounds. We open up and we just like, dang, you want to taste that blood over there.
Yeah, that guy that got kicked off, man, that was horrible. He
he embarrassed y'all sideline too, man. He made y'all feel.
He's like he was like a third string or whatever, and he was trying to come on the field on special teams. And I thought that we needed one more, but then I did a recount. I was like, no, we got 11. So as he's coming on the field, I'm telling him, you good, go back. And then he just got mad and threw his helmet. And boy, that was the worst thing ever. I believe that's the reason.
Stuff like that going on. It'd be a lot going on. I just enjoy my time on my sideline, because if you do something like that on the Dallas sideline, you better hope you don't get jumped on by, you know what I'm saying, all the leaders and stuff like that. But you really going to take off all your stuff and get off our sideline. Like, we don't condone that kind of stuff going on. Like, if you know, you know what I'm saying, we tell everybody, you know what I'm saying, it's a big game. You might not play as much. Don't be down.
Yeah.
Just enjoy, you know what I'm saying, enjoy that celebration. Because you may not be a key part of this game scheme. It's not about you. It's about those 11 men fighting for you. You know what I'm saying? It's a war. And every war, some people don't even get to touch the battlefield, bro. And people don't even understand that in war. Sometimes people don't even touch the battlefield sometimes, man. So, I mean, with the Dynasty, we understand that, man. We understand that this guy is doing better than me right now. So he needs to get in there and he got to make a play. And we targeted him, this guy. So, I mean, it's not like, I mean, certain teams, like, you know what I'm saying, like I said, Prattville was a very hard game, you know what I'm saying? First of all, it was a long drive. I didn't, you know what I'm saying, for myself, it was a long drive, because I didn't show up to the middle of the first quarter. You know what I'm saying? I just know for a fact, for me, it was a long drive, and I was exhausted, man. So, I mean, when you got stuff like that going on, a lot of guys only travel that day, you know what I'm saying? They don't leave that Friday, they get out there that day. And everything like that, man, you just got to, like I said, you got to stay composed, man. You got to lick your chops, so you got to punch them in the head when they down, man. You see that eye bleed, you got to just press that eye a little more. You know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't be what it is.
Off what Gladden said, just then when he was talking about it may not be your game or something like that. AJ made a call on the sideline that pretty much led to the game, to my touchdown. He was going up against the corner most of the game, and then he was like, Coach, if you put Corey over there, Corey can out-jump him. I'm 100% certain. Because they was calling deep ball AJ. AJ
sucked. So, I was so mad.
Me and AJ,
I was so mad when you went to the play.
That one play, AJ was like, Corey, just go get it. He was like, you can out-jump him. He was like, because I'm killing this man, so I know you got him. AJ pulled, like, He was just like, sacrifice for the greater good or something. Because I wasn't even looking on that side. He was just like, just go for it. And then Mike, Steve, we all looked at each other and was like, let's do it.
Now, Matt, when to Yancey's point, to Gladney's point, and to Corey's point, when you see a team that is bickering like that and the cracks are starting to happen late in the game, do you know, it's funny, like, in hindsight, looking back at that game and looking back at how certain things are starting to kind of fracture and break apart, did you know that this would be the end of that entire franchise as you knew it?
No, I didn't. I actually thought they would pretty much bring everybody back and run it back. But the Dynasty, you know, their other nickname is Organization Killer, or Team Killer. Because that's Prattville, Mobile, Opelika.
Yeah.
Don't forget somebody in the Falcons. You would hear some of the rumblings and stuff like that, but if you weren't a part of it, you really don't know what was going on. And then, lo and behold, the next season rolled around, and Prattville was saying they were going to have a team, and they didn't have a team. And you're just like, what? And I just, because a lot of time I consider bickering just part of the game. Some players just ain't going to be happy. But I did not see.
Yeah, it was more than just big.
That was some
in-house stuff.
Now,
yeah, but
Yancey, there was a rumor. There was a rumor that one of your defensive players, like your, how to explain it, your defense could have been even better with the addition of a veteran linebacker from another team, but he would have to sit behind somebody who he is much better than.
Yeah.
Did this player know like what the deal was going to be, and he decided to stay where he was? I mean, like Gladney said, you can mention names. If you don't mention names, it's cool. But can you
explain the story? Yeah, so linebacker for Alabama Blackhawks, Corey Wells, was supposed to play with us that year. He came to practice and everything, doing his thing, you know how he do. He's supposed to start. In his mind, he's supposed to start. We think he's supposed to start. But we know how the organization was working at the time. We was like, you're not going to start. You're going to be his backup, Henley Hughes. So he was like, all right, deuces, I'm going back to Birmingham. And that was that. So
damn,
we should have had Corey on our team that year.
Now, Gladney, like when I look at this game and I said how I posted how this is one of the most pivotal games in league history, because if you think about it, this is the game that pretty much cemented the Dynasty's legend. Like, this is their back-to-back title in this league. They lost one game. They beat every team, you know. They beat teams left, right, and center. You, just like Matt was saying, you retired the Generals. You retired the Falcons. You retired the Patriots. You retired a lot of teams. What makes this ring different than the rest that you currently possess?
This ring, I don't know, like this second ring, man, it was meaningful to us, man, everything like that. But I don't know, it's not like I feel like it was more meaningful to us because, like, first of all, we had did a lot of off-season recruiting, and we felt like we were supposed to be undefeated. Everything like that, the Chris City game, you know what I'm saying, it hurt a lot of us. Like, people don't really know about that, but, you know what I'm saying, like, it hurt a lot of our pride, and it made us work harder and realize, like, somebody could come in here and take something from us, you know what I'm saying, without even working for it. And, you know what I'm saying, like, we just put it to a point where, like, we won't ever be cheated again. We won't ever, you know what I'm saying, lead a game in the ref chambers again like that. Like, it meant a lot as far as, like, putting our foot on our legacy to me, I guess. Because, I mean, we really thought, you know what I'm saying, when we played Mobile that game before the championship game, we really thought we were going to be playing Chris City, just to be honest with you. We had prepped our minds, prepped our body and soul for revenge. You know what I'm saying? We got to go to New Orleans. We got an away game for the playoffs. We dare them to cheat us and everything like that. And they ride to the game. It was just like, oh, we playing Mobile. We finna beat Mobile. And we playing whoever we got to play. And we going to win a championship. And for us to come out, and we came out how we came out, down majority of the game and had to fight our way back in, it made that ring more meaningful to us. You know what I'm saying? It's like, dang, we kind of overlooked these guys, and they came out and hit us in our mouth, and it, you know what I'm saying? Really made us wake up. Like, I don't take nothing away from Prattville. They were a great organization. They had a lot of great additions. You know what I'm saying? That was the team that you think you're going to be. It's like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like we beat the Miami Heat that year. You know what I'm saying? Like, almost. They got top DNs, number one player in the league, top quarterback, you know what I'm saying? Like, top-ranked quarterback in, like, 2 years, went to the championship, like, 3 years back-to-back, but, you know what I'm saying, sound like Buffalo Bills in championship, so, you know what I'm saying?
Now, Matt,
that ring was real meaningful, you know, real meaningful.
Which one of those do you wear?
Who?
You. Like, which one of the rings that you have won do you still wear, or do you not wear any of them?
Well, first of all, I ain't got my third ring yet, you know what I'm saying? We still waiting, but no, I say they coming from overseas, so, you know, the coronavirus must have got some of the workers that got our rings, because we ain't seen none yet. So I wear my rings to games, and I wear both of them to the game, because I like to show off. I like to brand, you know what I'm saying? I like the boots, I like the boats, you know what I'm saying? So I got one on my pinky ring, one on my middle finger, and I think I just ordered another pinky ring. I'm not sure. We'll find out when the gear's here, whenever that is. But, yeah, I kind of wear all my rings. If we go to a game or something like that, I wear them, show them off. We go out of town to a club or something like that. So, like, we come to your city, we make sure we turn up in your city after we beat you. So we wear our rings then, too, you know. I know I'm sorry. I'm not the guy, but this is every day, though. You can ask Corey. I'm really like this.
Oh, God.
Nah.
That's funny shit. That's funny shit right there. Matt, when you look at the Prattville franchise, two questions. Do you think they could ever build to be what they were, or do you think that this is more of a lightning in the bottle, they had their one shot, and it will never be the same?
I think a few conversations that need to be had first. And I think they could possibly build back to what they had. But I think that there has to be some bridges that had to be rebuilt and some conversations that need to be had between some people for it to even remotely even get started. And then you gotta have a good core of leadership and listen to your leaders for it to work.
Do you think that those conversations are going to be had, or do you think this is more of like it's not going to happen for them?
I don't see it happening. I could be wrong, but I don't see it happening.
I think too much time has passed. Now, yeah. Sark, to you, when you look at the future and you look at how much, one, let me ask you this, how much longer do you think you would play?
I got aspirations to actually try out for, like, XFL. So, I'm actually, I think I got some time. Honestly, I think I keep playing. Check my wife as far as, like, make sure home is good. And if I can keep doing it at a high level, I'm going to keep playing. I mean, I'm doing it for fun, like Latin said. It's kind of, it's peaceful for me. Like, it's not, they're not doing nothing that's making my life stressful. It's a relief. I like to put hands on people. I think Eugene kind of said it when he made that post, something that don't nobody know about you.
You're a blocker.
I'm an aggressor. Yeah, I'm an aggressor. So I have fun, like, going in, trying to crack a linebacker, trying to hit the biggest guy, see the outcome. Like, I don't – I just like that contact. So I'm enjoying it. My wife don't too much like the fact that I like contact like that. But, I mean, as long as I'm safe, I think I keep playing.
Now, Yancey, you are a veteran here. You have won different spots. You have enjoyed success. Two questions. Do you think that Prattville will ever come back together and make a legitimate run? And how much longer do you think that you would play before you hit the sidelines and actually become a full-time coach?
Prattville will not be coming back. Well, if they do come back, it won't be the same because all the veterans that was there, we're old and about to retire. So with me, I use it as a getaway and for fun. So if I still can play and everything is good at home, like Corey said, I'm going to still play.
Now,
I'm not going to play when I'm 40, though. When I'm 40, it's over with. I don't care if I can play or not. I ain't playing at that age. Not doing that.
Now, y'all make it seem like that's like ancient. Damn. For football, it might be, but... Now, Agani, you said you do this for fun. How much longer do you think this will be fun? And once you do retire, what will you do as a hobby to kind of fill that time? Like coaching, you said that you want to kind of get into wine a little bit, or? Gladney.
Oh, you talking to me? My bad.
Yeah.
My bad. That's on me. I'm up there cleaning the kitchen here, but I ain't know you fighting. Man, I'll be honest. I actually retired, man. I told Mike I was done, man, after the third championship. Actually, I told Mike this. I told Mike I would come in. I was going to play a year. We win a championship. I was going to retire after the first championship. The next year, he begged me. I played again. And then last year, it was supposed to be my last year actually playing completely, you know what I'm saying? So, I don't know, like, this kind of threw me for a loop. I actually retired, so I came back, like I said, my brother plus. So, it kind of boosted my motivation, like, to come back and start playing ball. Like, man, I've always wanted to play with my little brother. Like, I trained my little brother when I played in arena football. He used to come with me, you know what I'm saying, out of town. Like, we was in Colorado, so he trained in Colorado after his high school career to try to go to college, but he ultimately chose academics over everything. But I coached my little brother, and I knew he was a good talent, so I kind of wanted to play with him always. I always felt like we could play together in the arena or professionally or something like that. You know, so when he told me he wanted to play this year, I jumped at the chance to, like, play with him. So, you know what I'm saying, the first two games, like, he don't start because he joined the team late, and we have penalties and stuff like this. But he's actually supposed to be a star. You know what I'm saying? Like, so he's, you know what I'm saying, he's a unique talent. He, like, still the same way I feel. You know what I'm saying? He just got to let some aggression out. So, I mean, I don't know. This might be my last year, but with the virus and stuff going on again, man, it's like, dang, do I retire? Do I play another year? You get another full season in? Like, I'll be 31 this year. You know what I'm saying? So, I don't know. I might play one more year if my brother can play. If he don't play, I'm retiring next year and coach the O-line full time. But if my brother come back and play another year, I'll probably play one more year and then I'm done for sure. I mean, we were going to win this one anyway. You know what I'm saying? We beat the team that had the most chance of beating us all league, which was the Blackhawks. You know what I'm saying? So hopefully somebody else give us a little competition. I know they're going to say they're going to give us some, but you know what that means, Pierre. You know what I'm saying? They're going to come out there and be a little nervous. shaking in their cleats. Oh,
we'll see y'all again. And this team come back up, we'll see y'all again.
Y'all boys DJ, man. Y'all boys DJ, y'all represent, man.
Who was it? It was a dude from, what was it, the, what is that team? The orange and green, Steel City Raptors? Like, y'all hung, like, 30 on them, and he's like, well, you know, my one play, I'm like, they beat your ass in front of everybody in the world over here, like, in public, and you're going to sit there and talk. Now, Matt, when you see somebody who runs their mouth after catching hands, feet, knees, elbows, toes, headbutts, shoulders, whatever, do you automatically disregard what they have to say?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's like the person, you know, when you in the old hood and somebody getting their ass kicked, and then they tell you, "Hey man, but did you see that one punch I got in?" No. You got a punch in? Yeah, man. Hey, you see it? No. All I saw was with them tagging on your goddamn tater 100 times, man. So, you know, moral victories. You remember that? That's his moral victory.
We all
That's funny. Whatever. That was funny. I was like, "Dog, we didn't even do y'all, man. Like, we didn't talk about y'all. We used to Jordan face things, bro. Every game used to be the underdog. Terry, you remember that? Like, when you first came in the league, everybody thought, they like, oh, y'all gonna lose this game. Y'all gonna lose this game. Y'all really not that good. And we used to Jordan face everybody. Like, we just whooped on y'all and left y'all alone. Like, gave y'all points. So, like, they didn't come back and do that. I'm like, "Dog, we should have gave y'all more props, bro. But we didn't even say that. But y'all was a tune-up game, bro. We didn't even have a preseason game. That's how much respect we had for y'all. We didn't even play a preseason game. I haven't seen Corium in the whole summer, bro. Like, I worked the whole summer. Like, we didn't even practice together, full team. And we came out and whooped on y'all like that in the second half after we got our stuff together. And you want to say this to us?
It's like,
I hate to embarrass these people, man, but they don't want it with the guys, man. They don't want it with us.
It's like, remember, like, you know, like, even being in the ring and having to spar with somebody, like, you are, I'm in a sparring and a guy hits me with a jab.
Let me
speak
with you for a second. I gotta go to
be like, oh, I hit you with a jab. Okay, but I just knocked you out.
Sit with Elijah for a second. I gotta go to the call.
And it's just one of those dudes who, like, you know, like, the dude will sit there and say about that one little punch that he hit you with, but then you shake it off and walk through the next six punches, and you end up, you know, trying to push his nose to the back of his head. And it's just one of those things, Tuck, that is funny to me. Like, when you see the amount of talk in the league from the younger players, not the vets, because the vets, some of these veterans have earned their stripes in this league. When you see the younger players who are still wet behind the ears, like, you had a couple of go at a few young players who like to step to you. When you see that, is it more of a motivational thing or more of a, you know what, let me just shut him up quick?
Both. I'm already self-driven, self-motivated. So when you talking, I kind of just want to crush you. So I'm just going to shut it down real quick, fast. That's why I wish my post had got approved. But I thought I had worded it very PG, but it didn't get approved. So I'm going to have to give it a second shot. I think it's about respect more than anything. I looked at it the same way I looked in college, because in college I came in trying to talk, you know, because I was a big dude on my high school. So I'm thinking I'm finna come in here rough. So I got humbled quickly. All of
no, sir, you wasn't.
I got humbled quickly. So when new people come in, that's just how I'm built. It's like, bro, what have you done? Who have you done it against? Like, yeah, you feel like you're the big dude on your team, but who's at the top in the league? Like, I don't care about numbers. I care about who you got your numbers on, because I preach it all the time. Numbers lie. Numbers lie. You can manipulate numbers in your favor. So So you just can't base it off nothing. That film, now that film don't lie.
Nope.
That film do not lie. So I clicked on some film just to see you, and I'm like, yeah, bro, just shut up talking because you aggravate me. When you agitate me, I go from having fun to I'm in the league. So a light flip for me when you aggravate me to a certain point.
Now, Yancey, just to kind of work off Tuck's point, like, you've been around, you've won, like I said, different spots, but yet you keep an even keel when you're like, you're calm about it. You know, you see young dudes who don't like to listen and who don't like to be mentored, but you don't really take it to heart. You're like, you know what, just do what you need to do then. Like, kind of, it's more of a reserve type of leadership. So let me ask you this. What about the young player pisses you off most?
When they don't listen and they go out there and mess up, and then when they finally do it the way you said do it, and they do it and they come back to you, be like, yeah, you was right. Like, yeah, you know I was right. You should have listened. That's what they get me when they don't listen. Like, I ain't been there before. Been playing this game too long. I done seen it. I done it. I done messed up. I done corrected my mistake. So I can at least give my advice to you. You can listen, but if you don't listen, that's on you.
Now, we're going to end on a fun question around. Now, Glenny, being a bartender, which would you rather drink? A good bottle of wine or a good six-pack? And what six-pack would it be, and what bottle of wine would it be?
Well, being a good bartender, I only drink cognac. I have like 40 major drinks with my cognac, the Hennessy preferably. If I want a finer champagne, cognac got to be 1738. But wine, I only like white wine. I'm not really a big wine connoisseur. I used to bartend at a lot of nightclubs, so I call them a little bit, you know, in the black people clubs and stuff where, you know what I'm saying, most people drink like Walker Down, stuff like that. Most of these brothers know what I'm talking about here. Mm-hmm. Now I do a fine dining bartending where I work for like more upscale kind of restaurant now, so I had to learn about my wine. So if I think I would do a wine, I would do a Chardonnay Kendall Jackson. I like that. It's very like, not a bitter, but kind of on the sweeter side. Or a Riesling, because I like a lot of spicy food, and it's a nice combination of sweet and spicy, sweet wine with a spicy food. And if I'm going to drink a six-pack, God rest my soul right now, you know what I'm saying? But I'm a Corona man, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
A little lion, you know what I'm saying? I'm a Corona man.
My man right there.
But, yeah, you know, right now, you know what I'm saying, we're kind of not drinking beer because I'm scared of coronas right now because of the bomb is playing. I'm just like, look here, don't go around quoting me. Ross said coronavirus and coronas now. I'm just playing, y'all.
Man, no, like that, like, to me, I'm the same. Like, let me ask you this. As a bartender, everyone knows Hennessy is not my thing. Like, I make bad decisions when I was younger. Like, it didn't sit right with me. But as somebody who's going to be 46 in about 3 months, convince me, what would you mix with Hennessy that you think I would like? Like, something that tastes good that everybody likes. Like, what is a good mixer for Hennessy?
I don't know, Terry. That's what I'm saying. I don't know. What you be drinking? Tequila?
Yeah.
I can get with that too, though, Terry. See, I drink cognac and tequila because, okay, so the love of my life, my future wife, she's half Puerto Rican, so she, like, only drinks tequila. Like, mm-hmm. So, I mean, if I don't have Hennessy in the house, more than likely I have a nice bottle of Honduras or, you know what I'm saying, we'll drink Jose, but she hates Patron. She calls that fake tequila. Casadores is real good. Don Julio, I like Don Julio too. But I don't know, like, it just depends. Like, see, I drink cognac straight, you know what I'm saying? But like, Gatewood, I call it Shake. Gatewood and Steve, then when I bartended at the nightclub, Gatewood put me on a drink called the Cadillac. So, you know what I'm saying? Of course, it's, you know what I'm saying, you can look it up. But it's a great drink, but I mean, it's real refreshing. It gets your toe up too, but you have to be an orange juice lover for it. Like, it's like Hennessy, Grand Marnier, lime juice, a little splash of Sprite with oranges. Now, I came up with a counter version from, you know what I'm saying, the ladies, and I call it the smooth criminal, with pineapple juice, you know what I'm saying? So I don't care if y'all steal my whiskey, it don't matter, you know what I'm saying? We all, and pray for your bartenders because, guys, we're out of work. A lot of guys, we're not non-essential, so I'm sitting at home every day with my daughters, not doing nothing, hoping for a stimulus check. So y'all pray for all industry workers, people that work in kitchens and, you know what I'm saying, bartenders and, you know what I'm saying, stuff like that, because I am not getting a check right now. I am really just broke right now, sitting at home with my kids. But, yeah, I like my smooth criminal drink. Like I say, I drink it straight, but if I do mix it with something, I like this little drink, you know what I'm saying, because I like the Grand Marnier is a sweetness. It takes away that tartness that most people don't like in cognac. See, I don't like whiskey, but see, that cognac, it has a smoother tartness to it. So, and Grand Marnier takes away from there, and then the pineapple juice within it, oh, man, it sets it off to give you, like, this great, sweet little hit, you know what I'm saying? I don't know. I'm kind of different, man, but you know what I'm saying? I know how to get some women to up, though. I'm just telling you right now.
Oh, man. Like, up here, there are certain bars up here, and even certain ones back home in Connecticut, that before all this happening, they were going to start shutting down. What they did was they sold a liter of a mixed drink for $25 to $30 per. And that's how they managed to kind of float it. So if you know, like, your establishment is still doing that, like, that could be a way to, like, kind of kind of circumvent the law. There you go. And
yeah,
it could be worth it.
Now, yeah, we're going to do something, though, man. I'm broke over here, though.
Hopefully this will go quicker because people just got to pay attention and stay their asses in the house. Like,
yeah, that is true.
It's one of those things. Now, Tuck, like, I know you said you're a tequila guy, but what is your beer of choice?
Tequila, but Corona is my beer if I'm going to drink one.
Now, are you more of a drink beer and eat food guy, or are you more of just a drink beer to just drink beer guy?
Drinking beer is the last option to drink if I'm drinking beer. I want to sit at the house and just buy beer. I just...
Didn't wash it. Now, Yancy, what's your go-to drink?
Remy. Oh, 1738.
Ooh.
And then if I drink beer, it's going to be, well, it was Corona, but I had to go with Modelo.
Yes, Modelo is a good one. It's good with food. Like, it is. Up here, we have a local place that, because, you know, whatever, like, I'll go, like, once a month, and I'd have a tall tequila sunrise, which is probably, like, a drinking glass full of tequila sunrise, and they would have a slice of, Irish cream cheesecake or sweet potato cheesecake. It's just one of those things that, you know, it goes right with the food. Matt, are you still with us? No. Matt's going to...
I'm still here.
All right. Now that, you know, everything's happening with the stay at home, what is your preferred drink?
And Wild Turkey 101.
Oh, my God. What is wrong with you?
If you ain't no backwood Alabama.
Boom. Yeah, I didn't say that.
White.
Ooh, yeah, man. Wild.
Wild Turkey 101, man.
Yeah.
I like my bourbon.
He probably got the moonshine.
You know it. I got phone. Now y'all want it. I got it. Lightning in the bottle.
My stomach hurts just hearing that.
Yeah, my old lady, she was like, she said, "Hey, you'll make me a sangria." I said, "Yeah, I got you." I said, "Strong or not strong?" She said, "It can be a little strong. Dip a little bit of that in there with the stuff." She said, "You put this whiskey in here?" I said, "Yep." This time I saw her, she was passed out on the couch, snoring. And I said, "You had to
try to kill that lady with that Wild Turkey, man."
Wow, turkey.
I'm a boss.
She said, I want to be
serving it to that lady, man.
You know, she drank her Hennessy straight, though. So I thought she could handle it.
Nah, that wild turkey different, man. That ain't just no regular joint.
So she sat down. She was like, man, she put it all the way on the other side of the pantry so she wouldn't even accidentally touch it.
Up here during the, like, on a New Year's Day, they have a polar bear dive where you see people strip down to their drawers and they go jump in Lake Michigan on January 1st. The water is about 31 degrees. There's ice chunks in the water. Mm-hmm. That's how cold it is. What they do is they will down whiskey, like have like a cup of whiskey just to kind of keep warm, and they go jump in the water. The first year I lived here was, what, 2004? I did that. I'm an idiot. When that water hits you, no matter how drunk you were, I just wanted this to kind of just run out of the water. I tripped on ice to get out of the water. And when you would hear the wind blow, the ice would collapse. You could hear the ice cracking. No, I'm good. I am not doing Wisconsin activities. I am too goddamn old now. But, fellas, I wanted to thank y'all for discussing this game. We got through a lot, you know, a lot of things that people will be unhappy and they'll be talking. It's, you know, it's on them. Yeah. You know, everyone here stands behind their word, and I really appreciate that. But I wanted to thank y'all for joining us.
Well, I hope you heard in the league. Tell them to add me, Roger Gladney. They got to
see. See, somebody will add you. When they see you, they're going to have to hear the story of you in the bar, and no one needs that.
See, Terry, I thought we were friends. You keep bringing up old stuff.
He's a gentle giant. Don't let him scare you.
We're not scared, but you need to go in the bar. I'm like, uh-uh.
I'm just being playful. It takes a lot to make me mad, though, you know?
So you playfully whipped somebody's ass and knocked out like four dudes over there.
I mean, but at the end of the day, I had fun doing it, though.
That's fair. I can't knock that. That's fair. Like, that is, I mean,
it only sucks when you can't fight. You know what I'm saying? When you can't fight, it's just another day in the office. You know, it's just like playing football with us.
I always like the dudes who will sit there and you're about to, like, square off with them, and they make the sound of, like, the... Like, if they're wearing gloves and they're trying to hit something, they're making that sound when they're trying to fight you. I like those. They're funny. Like, they're hilarious.
I like the thugs. They start gangbanging right when they're trying to fight you. They'd be like, yeah, on my set, on this. And I'd be like, yeah, on all that stuff I'm going to beat up.
or the dudes like to put their hands, like, way up in the air and, like, leave their chin just right there and not tuck their chin. And, like, keep their hands like...
Oh, yeah, they really don't know nothing about boxing.
Right.
Yeah, I tore with those guys. And then they think I'm a wrestler with them. That would be the funny thing about it. They'd be like, I bet you can't even fight. You're probably a wrestler. And I'd be like, yeah, come on and wrestle. Let's wrestle.
Or my favorite is the guy who, like, telegraphs his punch where he will come way from the hip. And you can see it coming from, like, 2 feet away. This is why, like, if there are parents out there who have sons or daughters, teach your kids to fight, like, to defend themselves. Because people now are with bad fight. I saw two guys the other day, it was on the news, two guys were slap fighting each other, like mad and windmilling, grown men windmilling each other.
Yeah, I wouldn't even record them like that. I wouldn't waste my film on stuff like this.
I blame the parents. But Yancey Powell, Roderick Gladney, of course, Matt Kelly, and Corey Tucker. Fellas, thank you so much for joining us tonight on this episode of Under the Helmet.
All right, thanks, man.
All right, anytime.
Always a pleasure. I'll be good.
Always.
Each other. All right, fellas.